And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Y'all just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here. I'm talking about Alabama. I mean it when I say it. I love living here. Listen, we go way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. All right, you know the deal. I mean, we can get so caught up in what is happening in other parts of the world, what is happening in D.C., what is happening on some grand scale, that we forget that sometimes what happens in our backyard means just as much to our daily lives, and it's important to also keep track of what's happening in and around and amongst you. So that being said, every once in a while, we got to cook up a batch of what I call home fries. Yeah. Sizzle them right on up there. Smelling good. All right, so home fries, things that are happening around the state of Alabama or related to Alabama, just know this. Earlier it was mentioned that we are indeed going to have the next presidential primary debate for the Republican Party right here in the heart of Dixie. Sweet Home Alabama is going to host the presidential primary debate with whoever's left standing on stage. It's going to be a winnowed down crowd, I believe. But Yellowhammer News, story by Grayson Everett, announces as of yesterday that SiriusXM host Megyn Kelly, News Nation's Elizabeth Vargas, and the Washington Free Beacon's Eliana Johnson have been named as the moderators. It's three women, Boomer. I think they need me in there. They need me to get in there and, like, mix it up.
Absolutely.
They do. This is discrimination.
Yeah, they need a Phil Williams in
there. They, by golly, need a right side ruffian dude. Yeah. They need a dude in there anyway. But no, it's, those are great. Those three great hosts. Moderators. They have been named moderators for the presidential primary debate in Tuscaloosa. With less than a year out from the election day, the fourth debate stage will showcase our winning Republican agenda against Biden's record of failure, says Ronna McDaniel. Yeah, well, okay. Ronna, thanks for what you do. ALGOP chairman, though, John Wall, called this shot this summer in an interview with the Yellowhammer News, saying that Alabama is a great state to showcase. He said, "We're a Super Tuesday state. We're a deep red state. And we're a state that really showcases the citizenship that Republican candidates should be going after. A lot of issues that we're seeing have the biggest impact on the national stage are also the ones that are most important to the people of Alabama." So here's the bottom line. It's unconfirmed where on campus it'll be. You can imagine there's only a few venues that might be big enough. But I suspect it will be in one of the major theaters, or for that matter, in the basketball gym. I don't know the arena. I don't know. But yeah. We'll see what happens. Oh, by the way, the qualifications to be on stage, they're making it tighter and tighter, right? So to qualify to be on the stage for the last one, you got to have at least 80,000, they call them unique donors. That means 80,000 people have sent a contribution in that are all separate and distinct from each other. You can't just have like one big super PAC or you funded it yourself because you're a billionaire. You got to have 6% support in two approved national polls, or 6% in one poll from two separate early voting states. Anyway, what I suspect is going to wind up happening, I'm going to bet in the next 20 days or so, we're probably going to see a few of the what I would call also-ran candidates drop off. I don't know if Tim Scott will, but I wouldn't be surprised. But I would think that Chris Christie would likely drop out of the race. I also cannot imagine that Tim Scott's going to stay in much longer, but I could see him dropping out and endorsing somebody. And if he does, I bet he's going to either endorse Nikki Haley because they're both from South Carolina, or he's going to endorse Ron DeSantis. We'll see. I take it back. I'm, you know what? Now that I'm saying that, I'm pretending that Trump's not there. He just doesn't get on the debate stage. But yeah, they may well endorse Trump. Anyway, I think we're going to see a field of about three, and if Trump joins them, four. And that'll be maybe Trump, DeSantis, Ramaswamy, and Haley. I think that's where we're going to have the last people standing. All right, that's coming up pretty soon. Keep your eyes on it. And when I hear about ticket sales, I'll let you know. Had somebody ask me yesterday. Here's one for you, home fries. Here's one. We keep talking about Birmingham Southern. Birmingham Southern, just about to the point of bankruptcy, insolvency, begging for a handout from the state government, begging for taxpayer dollars to rescue them from their own inability to manage their affairs. And yeah, I'm being rough because that's the case. I mean, it's true. It really kind of galls me, and I don't blame them for trying, but it really galls me that we're looking at a private college that by its own admission messed up its accounting and overspent in its endowment on things that it didn't need, like major landscaping and construction projects. And then they came back and begged for $30 million in taxpayer money. I think it was 45 at first. Then it got down to 30. And anyway, oh, look, they're finding new resources. How did that happen? Story here just broke, and I appreciate Amy from Rainbow City pointing this out to me. She sent it to me earlier in the day. The United Methodist Conference of North Alabama. So keep in mind, Samford is, I believe, a Methodist university, isn't it? Not Samford, but Birmingham Southern is a Methodist college. And they are part then, I guess, of the United Methodist Conference for North Alabama. Anyway, the UMCNA just came out to last night, actually, and said that in their most recent board meeting that they would approve a $2.5 million loan to Birmingham Southern, but only if the city of Birmingham provides an equal or greater than amount in a loan or donation to Birmingham Southern. In doing so, they will agree to do it as a second mortgage on the campus with interest at a competitive rate, with the note being a one-year note. So funny how that works out. When suddenly you can't get the taxpayer bailout, you turn around and, oh, look, some of the people that are allegedly supposed to be part of your network are willing to go, okay, all right, we'll do something. Now, they're not doing 30 mil, but they're doing 2.5, and it's 2.5 million they didn't have. Anyway, it clearly indicates that there were other methods available to them. They were just not pursuing them. Okay. Do I want this article next? I'll hang on to that one. I'm just talking to myself. Never mind me. Just working my way through my stack. So as we do home fries, by the way, keep in mind Secretary of State Wes Allen calling in about 20 minutes. This Congressional District 2, I mean, how many times have we talked about this? Congressional District 2 is the brand spanking new, fresh out of the box congressional district that we've never had drawn this way before because the court got involved and decided that Alabama's legislature just couldn't do its job, even though I disagree. They didn't ask me. But the reality is this. We've got a Congressional District 2 that is technically an open seat because Barry Moore, who is currently the congressman for District 2, got drawn out of his own district by the court, which is just, to me, galling. And so Barry Moore decided what he was going to do was go run against another incumbent, Jerry Carl, to be in Congressional District 1. So 2 is wide open. 2 is wide open, and all God's children now going to run for it. Today's the last day of qualifying. And all y'all going to run for it, apparently. I mean, and there's people, I'm thinking, who else wants to run? Boomer, you want to run for Congressional District 2?
I mean, everybody is, right?
I'll help you get down there and pay the fees. Let's get Boomer for Congress. I like it. Well, so story here, you may be interested to know because he's right here in this listening area, Anthony Daniels. And I like Anthony Daniels a lot. He's probably one of my favorite Democrats in the state, but I think he's just a great guy. Anyway, Anthony Daniels, who represents a big swath of Huntsville, has announced that he'll be running for Congressional District 2. Y'all, that's down in Montgomery and, you know, Bullock County and, you know, the Black Belt area around in the sort of the lower middle section. This is not where he lives, is what I'm trying to say. But he's going there. Now, the thing about Anthony Daniels in this case, though, and why it makes sense in a way, first of all, the law does not require you in Alabama to live in the congressional district that you are serving or running in. But he's from there. So he lives in Huntsville now, has lived in Huntsville for quite a while, has represented Huntsville in the state house for quite a while. But he grew up in Bullock County. Here's his quote. He says he graduated from Bullock County High School. He says, at the end of the day, tell me another candidate with roots in Union Springs or any other rural area or in the district that's talking about running. There's not a candidate out there that has the understanding and the knowledge and the experience that I've had growing up in Bullock County. Bullock County has, as of a year or two, the second highest increase in poverty in the United States of America. Wow. Do you think I like seeing those stats? No, not at all. Look at all those rural communities that are in a similar category. I'm not going to stand for that. A district that is rural and urban deserves a person that understands rural and urban. Okay. Anthony Daniels, I think, just became, in my opinion, probably the most qualified Democrat to run for the race. However, we do have State Senator Greg Albritton, Republican from Atmore, does not live in the district. State Senator Dick Brubaker, former State Senator Dick Brubaker, who was on the show a couple days ago from Montgomery, he does live in the district. An attorney that I don't know named Caroline Dobson, a Republican, also from Montgomery. So two out of the three Republicans live in the district, one doesn't. And of the Democrats, we also have, and oh boy, this is going to be fun, Wandalyn Gavan. Y'all, she's supposed to make her announcement today. She may have already made it. Here's my question is, what color hair was she going to have today for her announcement? Did I go there? I did. This is the most flamboyant, race-baiting, activist, mouthiest person in the Alabama state legislature, period. This is the person who not long ago referred to the only black Republican in the state house as basically referred to him with the N-word from the podium in the house, and there was calls for censure of her. This is the woman who, if there's an activist moment that you can imagine on the state house floor, it's usually got her attached to it somehow. I have watched her go down there in the floor, the well of the house, and just begin yelling to the point that the speaker at the time, Mac McCutcheon, had to bang the gavel and call for order with her yelling, "I'm going to burn this place down." Well, you know what? That's who's running for Congress now, Representative Wandalyn Gavan. She's an attorney and a member of the House of Representatives since 2010, said in a phone interview that she intended to be an advocate for the district, which runs across Alabama's Black Belt from Mississippi border to the Georgia line. She says, "The people that deserve to have their voices heard, I will be a vessel." Oh, apparently there are only certain people that believe that she believes deserve to have their voices heard. Wording is everything. Your quote is now memorialized. "The people that deserve to have their voices heard," she says, "I'll be a vessel for those whose voices cannot be heard. There's a need for new, fresh, progressive leadership in Alabama." What she's trying to say there is, Terry Sewell, you ain't getting it done. I'm going to come down there and be the loud one. She wants, I can tell you right now, she wants so bad to be the next member of the squad. That's what she wants. Yeah, and oh, by the way, if you think Cori Bush and you know, AOC and some of the other members of the squad are flamboyant, I just listen. I don't know if they have anything on Wandalyn Gavan. This is going to be a hoot, y'all, a hoot. All right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back. We're cooking up some home fries. When we get right back, I'll tell you, there are some of y'all that won't be paying as much tax this year. Pray tell, what does this mean? I'll tell you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Y'all, I am just saying, making common sense like a superpower up in here. By the way, Boomer, I tell you what, before you hit that sound effect, let me just make sure you know, we may have opened up something.
Oh, no. What's that?
Raven from Russellville says, "I'm writing in Boomer for District 2. Let's get that going." He says, "Boomer for Congress." Has a ring to it, doesn't it? He says.
Has a nice ring to it.
Nice ring to it. Boomer.
Boomer for Congress.
I want a sign in my yard. John from Huntsville says, anyway, John's sending you jokes now. So let me move on. Okay. Tell you what, we're going to continue cooking up a batch of home fries. Yeah. Can't you just smell them from where you are? This is. By the way, this is an Anthony Daniels story. It just dawned on me. Apparently, I am promoting the campaign of Anthony Daniels. So you may recall that we actually had Anthony Daniels, Representative Anthony Daniels, minority leader in the state house, in the studio, or not in the studio, but on the phone. Oh gosh, it's been 6 months ago. Did a great job. Some of y'all were surprised. You were texting in saying, "Are you sure he's a Democrat?" Because he was calling for a tax cut and encouraging people to get back to work and trying to encourage productivity through work. And I thought, well, that's cool. So we had him on. Well, the deal was he had the idea, which I don't know that anybody else has had this idea, that if you can encourage people to work and to work more and to encourage employers to encourage their employees to work more, how could you do it? Well, one of the first things that he thought of, and it's now the law, is to do away with any state payroll tax on overtime hours. I mean, it's not going to be a huge dent to the state. It's like a $45 million a year dent to the revenues of the state. And we got a multi-billion dollar annual budget. But it means something to the individual. So basically, what it means is, in effect, the law means a 5% pay raise on work that you do over 40 hours a week for full-time hourly employees. And that's, so basically, if you're working at a clock-in, clock-out job, and you decide, you know, you're like, I don't feel like staying an extra hour or three. The boss keeps asking me, can I do some overtime? Think about this. It's 5% more for you now if you do. And what Daniels was saying and what the legislature agreed with was, this is a great way to encourage productivity. It's a great way to say, hey, look, some of our businesses are getting back on their feet post-COVID, and in the economy we're in, we need more people. We can't find them all. Maybe they need you to work overtime. If you'll work overtime, the state of Alabama is going to say, we won't tax you on that. I think that's pretty cool. So anyway, that takes effect January 1. So story here on AL.com, one of the few times that I'll go to AL.com lately, says starting January 1, full-time hourly workers in Alabama will pay no state income tax on the overtime pay, defined as any work in excess of 40 hours in a week. State officials gathered together at the Hyundai Auto Assembly Plant in Montgomery on Thursday to commemorate the new law, which was the result of a bill sponsored by House Minority Leader Anthony Daniels, Democrat from Huntsville. In effect, it says the law means a 5% raise on pay for work over 40 hours a week for full-time hourly employees, because that's the state income tax rate. Anyway, the Business Council of Alabama came out there and, you know, trumpeted it, and others, and John Bargonier, who I remember from days back in the legislature, he's now the president and CEO of Manufacture Alabama. Anyway, they are pretty stoked. So January 1, work overtime, get paid more. This one, I don't have more details. I almost didn't bring the story because it's not rounded out yet. But the Trustful Tribune, for whom the publisher is our good friend Scott Buttram, Trustful Tribune is reporting that the mayor of Hansville, which is over there in Coleman County, the mayor of Hansville was just indicted day before last on 15 counts of using his office for personal gain. And the interesting thing is they don't give you details on what the charges are. In fact, it even says the charges are not, the actual charges are not available at this time. The DA even said he's limited what he can say at this point, but he's asking for others who may have information to come forward if they need to, because the indictment, apparently whatever the grand jury saw, was enough. And so Mayor Kenneth Nail, the mayor of Hansville over in Coleman County, indicted on 15 counts of using his office for personal gain. All right, we're coming right back after this break here in a minute, and we're going to have one of our elected officials, Secretary of State, Wes Allen, who is going to be on with us talking about several things related to elections, one of which is we've got a story right here from 1819 News about how his office is taking a creative approach to trying to get away from the old school, very difficult means of determining when they draw the new lines, which a lot of new lines have been drawn, where people live. Can we tell? Well, we can tell if we look at, you know, GPS systems and GIS mapping and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, with a grant, we've got GIS mapping capability now in all 67 counties, trying to make sure that we get people voting in the right spots and knowing where they are. But then secondarily, I want to ask him about this story that came out. Did you hear about the fact that there have been election officials in multiple states who received fentanyl-laced envelopes in the mail? So we'll talk to him about that. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Be right back.